program are those of the host and the participants.
Okie doke. Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you on WILL AM 580, beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Today we're going to be talking about a new book called Banana Republicans, co-authored by our guest, John Stauber. John Stauber is the founder and director of the Center for Media and Democracy. He's a longtime activist and investigative writer, and he's been a guest on this show twice before. He's the author, with his collaborator Sheldon Rampton, of four other books: Toxic Sludge Is Good for You, Mad Cow USA, Trust Us, We're Experts, and most recently, Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq. His brand new book with Sheldon Rampton is titled Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into a One-Party State. Joining us from Madison, Wisconsin, is our guest today, John Stauber. John, are you there?
I am, Bob, and thanks very much for having me on the program.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, John. As some of our listeners may know, John and I are old friends from when I lived in Madison. We've known each other for a long time, and it's always a treat to have you on the air. You're one of our most popular guests over the last few years. Let's talk about this book. What was the purpose? Why did you write the book, and what's the argument you're making?
Well, Bob, as you know, Sheldon Rampton and I here at our Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin, specialize in investigative reporting on propaganda campaigns. And of course, growing up in the United States, we're all told we don't have propaganda, that's sort of a dirty word, and it describes something that existed in Stalin's Russia or Hitler's Germany. But as you know, and as I know from investigating and researching these issues, and as academic investigators demonstrate, it's actually in free societies where we have the most propaganda. And I started the center 10 years ago. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary this week here in Madison because there wasn't any activist or public interest or investigative organization out there really looking at propaganda. In fact, the academics find that 40% or more of what we get as news is just public relations from government or industry passed on as news. So, just to frame the book a little bit, that's what we do. And as you mentioned, our last book, Weapons of Mass Deception, looked at one of the most damaging, aggressive, and effective propaganda campaigns ever waged in the United States. And this was the massive campaign of what I think most people are now finally coming to realize was made up of, at best, hyperbole, and at worst, lies and outright deceptions by the Bush administration to justify its attack on Iraq. And as people probably remember, in the so-called run-up to the war in Iraq, the mainstream media, led by Fox, but including all the mainstream media, really, rather than doing what media has got to do in a democracy, being courageous, challenging the assertions of the government, standing up to the claims of the administration, not only rolled over, but became a huge propaganda echo chamber, like cheerleaders for the war. It was a very frightening situation. Some of the few liberals in the media, like Phil Donahue, were punished and censored. Donahue lost his program on MSNBC for even having on guests, as an MSNBC memo that leaked out admitted, even having on guests who were critical of the administration or the march to war. So we were very excited last year, last summer in July, when our book Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, was published by a major U.S. Publisher. And even we, as media critics, were people who are familiar with the way the mass media self-censors to please corporations and government, even we were stunned at how our book was blacklisted. It was a bestseller. It spent 8 weeks on the extended New York Times bestseller list. It flew out of stores. It sold over 50,000 copies in a matter of months. It's still selling well. But it was not reviewed by 98 of the 100 largest papers in the country. We were not interviewed by ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, Fox, MSNBC. There was just a complete wall of silence, I think in large part because Weapons of Mass Deception talked about how the media was complicit in selling the war. And that led us directly to our current book, Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into a One-Party State, because this type of big lie propaganda campaign that got our nation into Iraq and the total failure of the media to challenge that propaganda campaign or even to have on critics of the administration's policies is the sort of thing that can't happen in a democracy. It can only happen in a one-party state. So we decided to take a look at what we see as the one-party state of conservatism that's prevailing in the United States right now.
We're talking to John Stauber today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. This is a live show coming to you from Campbell Hall, so please do call in if you have a question or comment for John Stauber. The number is 333-9455, the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. And let me tell you right now that if you'd like to call in or you're thinking about calling into this program, this is a good show to do it during because for the next 4 weeks we're going to have taped shows. I will be on the road for the next 4 weeks hunting down good stories for the Media Matters show, so we will not be doing live shows. And our guests in the next few weeks are going to be David Barsamian, Katrina Vandenhoevel, Chalmers Johnson, Sut Jolly, and Mark Crispin Miller. We've got some terrific shows lined up, but they will not be live shows. So please do call in today if you'd like to talk to John Stauber, our guest and the author, along with Sheldon Rampton, of the brand new book, Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into a One-Party State. Again, the number 333-9455, the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. John, if you know, when the mea culpas came by the New York Times not too long ago for its coverage of the build-up to the war, and the other media, to a lesser extent, began to acknowledge that, in fact, they had participated in the false claims that the administration made to lead to the war, and some of the media, to their considerable credit, like the trade publication Editor and Publisher, has been aggressively criticizing the media for its coverage of the war. At this point, in the last couple of months, have you received more calls from the news media to discuss this now that, in effect, your argument's been vindicated?
No, not to discuss this issue, which is very interesting. And I find one of the most interesting aspects of the current situation with the public's confusion over why we went to war to be that last September, our president, George Bush, admitted publicly that there is absolutely no credible evidence, none whatsoever, linking Saddam Hussein to the terror attacks of 9/11. Now, that was a stunning admission because, of course, it was the administration repeating over and over this big lie about how Saddam was somehow linked to 9/11. And the next 9/11 would be a mushroom cloud over America because Saddam had nuclear weapons. We knew where they were. That really sold the war. I mean, after all, if Saddam wasn't behind 9/11, why did we go to war against Iraq the way we did? I think what's stunning is that President Bush was forced under international pressure last September to make that admission. And yet today, the latest survey I've seen, and there was one done just a few weeks ago, shows that a majority of Americans still believe Saddam was behind 9/11. And I think these mea culpas, such as a few weeks ago when the New York Times admitted inside their paper, they should have apologized above the fold on the front page, that they had allowed Judith Miller and others to take propaganda provided by the CIA front group, Iraqi National Congress, on weapons of mass destruction, and that the New York Times had blasted that information out on its front page as indicating that indeed Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. The New York Times did apologize, but unfortunately most Americans don't read the New York Times and they don't get their news from the print media, and they don't read Editor and Publisher. Most Americans get most of their news from television. And it was fascinating to see how Bill O'Reilly spun the New York Times admission on his show. I just happened to catch him about a week ago saying, well, now we know what happened. In essence, O'Reilly said, and he claimed to get this from some deep inside source, Chalabi fooled the New York Times, and the liberal media fooled the rest of us into supporting the war on the basis of weapons of mass destruction. I mean, it's just stunning to see the disconnect between the factual information that's coming out, the President of the United States forced to admit no ties whatsoever between Saddam and 9/11, and yet this propaganda machine that's been perpetrated and maintained by the media isn't getting the word out. People are still believing Saddam was behind 9/11.
We're talking to John Stauber today in Media Matters. John Stauber is the co-author with his running mate Sheldon Rampton of the brand new book, Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into a One-Party State. This book is published by Tarcher Penguin, who has become your standard publisher, haven't they, John?
We love Tarcher Penguin. You know, we're out there bashing corporate domination of the media every day, but here we are with a corporate publisher that's one of the biggest. Tarcher Penguin is owned by the Pearson conglomerate, and our editor called us up a year ago, April, when the first week of the U.S. Invasion of Iraq, and said, why don't you guys write a book, Weapons of Mass Deception, on the selling of this war? So in this case, the corporate media has been very kind to us.
Well, the number here at Media Matters, if you want to talk to John about the book, is 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. We have a few callers who've been very patient. Let's go to the phone lines right now. Line 1, Savoy, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Well, I guess my question is pretty simple, but it's very frustrating as a news and media consumer. Why is this administration given pretty much a pass on some pretty, you know, horrendous lies and you know, things come out like this past week? I know that, you know, Reagan was a very popular president, so his death was certainly covered very widely. But the memos that have been found linking the torture practices and this administration, the only way that I heard about it was basically through the BBC as a one-line headline at the end of, you know, their headlines. Why is it that this country, you know, will cover for months and months the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal, but not cover what is, in my mind, a much more important systematic lying to us about, you know, life and death situations? And I'll hang up and listen. I just would like to hear some comments.
Well, I'll be happy to give you my take on that, and I know Bob and I could probably go on for hours on this subject, because you've cut to the quick about one of the most serious threats to our democracy, the failure of our news media to behave courageously and independently and in an investigative fashion, and to stand up to its corporate advertisers and to government pressure. You know, for me, it comes down to this. When you look at the news media in the United States, it's primarily television through which most people get their news. Most of the news and information people get now comes from a handful of giant corporations. And these huge transnationals self-censor every day to please their corporate advertisers. And they're not interested in taking a hard, aggressive approach towards this administration. I think there's a long history in the United States. I've certainly seen it in my half century of the major U.S. media doing its worst job on explaining to the American public what our foreign policy is all about. We have a media that politically runs the gamut from center to right, for the most part, and that's the so-called mainstream liberal media. And the most important media in the United States right now, the most effective opinion-shaping media, is blatantly far-right, and that's right-wing talk radio, and that's Fox News. And 9/11, as President Bush told his National Security Council when he returned to Washington that day, was an opportunity. And the right-wing media and the right-wing in general used it as an opportunity to wrap itself in the flag and cheerlead for war, and the rest of the media simply fell in line. So I think what's happening now is an awful lot of people who are shocked and disgusted at seeing how the media sold the war in Iraq are waking up to other shortcomings of the media. Why do we get more coverage of a grisly murder, the Lacey Peterson murder trial in the San Francisco Bay Area, for instance, than we do of critically important issues like the fact that 43 million Americans lack health insurance? This is the media we have.
John, do you think, as a follow-up on what the questioner was getting at, do you think that the Democrats, specifically the Bill Clinton administration, was treated differently by the news media than the Bush administration, or is this something that all presidential administrations are going to get the sort of deferential treatment by the press?
Well, there's a really great book that's now 20 years old, written by Mark Hertzgard, titled On Bended Knee, and it was about how the White House press corps and the press in general treated the Ronald Reagan administration with favoritism and kid gloves. It was the press on bended knee towards the Reagan administration. I think that the Republicans especially, and we write about this in Banana Republicans, have done a much better job of understanding how to handle and manipulate the media, how to play the terror card, how to play the patriotism card, and how to get the media to treat it in the way it wants to be treated. But I think if you look at the Clinton administration, Clinton in many ways was a master of handling the media, but what he ran up against was this incredible, as Hillary Clinton called it, vast right-wing conspiracy. Now, the vast right-wing conspiracy is very real. In fact, we describe it in detail in Banana Republicans, and it's very proud of itself because it has come to dominate not just the media, as I've been saying, but to plant this sort of urban myth in the minds of most Americans that somehow this media isn't right-wing, it's really liberal. And what we describe in Banana Republicans is how today, for the first time since 1932, the Republican Party dominates the Supreme Court, the White House, both branches of Congress, and the major opinion-shaping media in the U.S. I think, Clinton got a lot of bad media. But if you look, as we do in Banana Republicans, at why was that, there's really two reasons. One, let's face it, he created the problem himself to a large degree with some of his personal habits and lying about sex. Should that have gotten the attention and the impeachment that it got? I think most people would say no way. But the right-wing attack machine is so effective at going after liberals and Democrats that it was able to really turn much of the media, and of course much of the media is right-wing now, against Clinton and his presidency. But I would say that, you know, if you look at the polls, Clinton remains tremendously popular among people, and he's very popular with the media, but the right wing is so powerful that they can launch a very effective, loud, echoing attack, even on a very popular president like Clinton.
We have a full bank of callers waiting to talk to our guest today, John Stauber, author of the brand new book, Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into One Party State. John Stauber lives in Madison, Wisconsin, where he is the director of the Center for Media and Democracy, and in that capacity works with Sheldon Rampton, his co-author on several books, including Banana Republicans. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 4, Fort Worth, Texas, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with John Stauber.
Thank you, Bob. Love your show. I'll listen off air. John, our Declaration of Independence gives us the inalienable right. Indeed, we the people have the obligation to either alter or abolish what's going on in Washington, D.C. When our government engages in the programs it's engaging in. Constructively, what do we the people do to alter this trend? Thank you.
Well, I think, again, the questioner goes right to the heart of the problem.
Yeah, our questioners don't dilly-dally around, John.
And I would say that the biggest problem we have is really this propaganda machine that I've been describing, because, You know, I've been going around the country with Banana Republicans. The book just came out. It came out in Ireland and Britain and Scotland, and my co-author's over there right now with it. We've been in cities like D.C., San Francisco, New York, and talking to large audiences. And I always ask these audiences, where do you get your information from? How many of you have watched Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity? How many of you have watched Joe Scarborough or listened to Rush Limbaugh in the last 24 hours? How many of you read books by Ann Coulter? And I might have 200 people in a room, and it's rare if two hands go up. And probably a lot of people listening to this show are sort of puzzled over those names, too. That's where most Americans get their news now. And it's not just the government. It would be so much easier if it were the government. The problem is the propaganda machine, the corporate media that is failing to give airtime and voice to people like me, like Bob McChesney, like Greg Pallas, like Amy Goodman. You know, name your favorite progressive. During the war, the lead-up to war, as I think I mentioned, MSNBC fired Phil Donahue. And they fired him not because his ratings are bad, his ratings are actually tremendous for MSNBC, but because they said internally, and it leaked out, that they did not want to be airing criticism of this administration. And I think a lot of us who read books, who get our information from the print media, who really try to think critically and analyze news information, you know, we go to class reunions, we go home to meet the extended family, we go to work, and we're just stunned. It's like we live in another world from folks who get most of their news from the mainstream media. And Fox, particularly this rabid right-wing network under the banner of Fair and Balanced, run by Roger Ailes, who we describe his history in our book Banana Republicans, owned by the right-wing media mogul like he's out of a Bond film or something, Rupert Murdoch. You know, the right-wing media brilliantly exploited 9/11 to make Fox the dominant source of news information in this country. And, you know, this is what the founders most feared. This, you know, back then the press consisted of handbills and posters and pamphlets. Well, today the press has become dominated by giant corporations and especially the right wing. So I think the revolution will not be televised, as Gil Scott-Heron said, obviously, but it really needs to occur at the grassroots, and there's all sorts of exciting developments happening at the grassroots, but it's going to take huge mobilization of people who are progressive, and it's going to take a lot of dedication and the sort of organizing and coalition building that I've never seen in my lifetime to really pull our media and our government back from the clutches of the far right.
John Stauber, in the new book, Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into a One-Party State, I mean, you really get at a point, I think the caller from Fort Worth was suggesting or implying, which is what's at stake now is really the survival of a Republican form of government, of constitutional rule, of the rule of law. I mean, this is a these are high-stakes game we're playing. This isn't just sort of like we've got a rough stretch we're going through, but really we've got a lot on the line right now, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, how do we get into this situation? Well, you know, let's give Republican strategists some credit because, as we describe in the book, for the last 40 years, the far right, emerging out of the Goldwater electoral debacle, decided we're going to take power. And with funding from wealthy far-right families like Scaife and Mellon and Bradley and Coors, we saw the setup of think tanks that developed the ideas, that developed the candidates, that developed the journalists. We saw political organizing that took over the Republican Party, and you know, the Reagan Revolution was really when this far-right element in the Republican Party gained control of it. And today, as I mentioned, for the first time since 32, it controls all branches of the federal government. One of the most amazing things is that these folks are way out of step with the majority of Americans on major issues.
Yeah, that's one of the striking development things I saw in your book.
Yeah, you know, people who identify themselves as liberal or left or progressive or, you know, independent thinkers often think, well, I'm really out of touch with my fellow Americans. No, it's the folks who dominate our political system and media, the far-right Republicans, who are way out of touch. But how have they managed to maintain control then? It's been through, as I mentioned, disciplined political organizing, but also brilliant political propaganda. Ronald Reagan, you know, was the happy face that the Republicans really needed to put out in front on their policies. And I remember during the Reagan presidency, and it's still true today with the Bush presidency, if you saw the results of opinion surveys on issue after issue, environment, jobs, tax fairness, a woman's right to choose, the Republicans are way out of touch. But at that bottom line, so do you like Ronald Reagan? Yes, we love him. People have been convinced to vote for far-right candidates that are not in line with what people say they believe on critical issues.
My name's Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters on WILL AM 580 from Urbana, Illinois. We're coming to you live today from Campbell Hall on the University of Illinois campus. Our guest is John Stauber, co-author of the brand new book, Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into a One-Party State, available in fine bookstores everywhere. We have many patient callers. If you'd like to join them in the queue, we will get to you. Our number is 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 2, Champagne, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Yes, I'm really worried about the priority or lack of priority the press gives to certain stories. For example, I couldn't believe when the $750 million that Bush apparently appropriated to use in Iraq instead of Afghanistan, apparently illegally, that this did not become much of a story in the mainstream press. They certainly didn't try to pursue it. I assume it would result in the impeachment of most presidents. Likewise with Richard Clark's book on Donald Rumsfeld, I mean a book in which he talked about Donald Rumsfeld saying that it would be easy to hit Iraq more than Afghanistan within days after 9/11. Never heard anything about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you make an interesting connection there, and it's this. You know, the fact that the Republican Party does control both the Senate and the Congress and the White House means that we're not seeing investigative committees looking at possibly impeachable offenses that this administration has made. I mean, I don't know if John Dean is a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or what, but John Dean, Nixon's attorney and the Watergate figure, of course, has a brilliant book out arguing that what this administration did in lying us into this war was worse than Watergate and impeachable. But we can't have even an investigation, much less a move towards impeachment, as the Republicans did with Clinton, on any of these major issues. What really happened with 9-1-1? What about all this lying to sell the recent bailout for the pharmaceutical industry in the name of Medicare reform? You know, what about using 9/11 to attack Iraq rather than take care of the real threat we face from Al-Qaeda because of this one-party state? So the media, you know, we've been talking about their problems, but the fact that there isn't a countervailing political force in the Congress or the Senate that can hold hearings means that there aren't those hearings for the media to cover, and we're not getting investigations we should be getting.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines right now. Line 1, Potomac, Illinois, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Thank you. I'm wondering why Israel and Sharon get such a free pass in our press. Nobody criticizes them. We just keep sending them money, rockets, helicopters, jet airplanes, maybe at a dollar apiece. Why don't we get after that?
Well, again, I would say it's both the press and both political parties. These political parties are so similar that last February in a New Yorker interview, John Kerry said that as far as he's concerned, there really aren't two political parties in America, that there are only two political parties in the few months between the conventions every 4 years and the presidential election. And I guess John Kerry really believes that because in Saturday's New York Times, there was a big front-page article about how he's still begging the conservative John McCain to be his running mate. And so I think if you look again at not just the media, but the two major political parties, which, let's face it, have both been taken over, the Republicans very willingly, by big business, neither of those parties are challenging the pro-right-wing Israeli lobby.
John, let me get to the clarify something about your argument. I mean, on one hand, it's clear that if you have one political party that controls the White House, both branches of Congress, dominates judiciary appointments, so they really have a judiciary that will be in their side when push comes to shove on crucial issues like a 2000 election. Mm-hmm. And also dominates the media. So the means of information that people have access to understand what's going on in government is controlled by this particular faction. If you have all these things in play, that's a bad thing. I think most people would agree with that. I think democratic theory would say that's not a good thing either. But during the late 1970s or 1960s, when the Democrats were more or less in a similar situation to the Republicans today, would you have written a book then about banana Democrats, that this is an issue, or is there something more to it than simply that it's a per se issue about party domination? Is there something more insidious to this process?
Well, I think it's a much, much different period, and it's a much more dangerous situation now, because if you look back at the 1960s and the 1970s, and I'm 51 years old, so I remember them. You know, the type of domination that one party or the other would have, and back then, you're absolutely right, the Democrats tended to be more in the ascendancy, was very different than the type of domination that the Republicans have achieved and their goal. We begin our book, for instance, quoting top Republican political strategists in our chapter, The War at Home, people like the former Marxist-Leninist David Horowitz. Well, he's still sort of a Leninist. Sheldon and I like to call him a market Leninist, but he's one of the top political strategists now for the Republicans, he and Grover Norquist. And these two fellows both see government as inherently bad. They sort of see not much difference, really, between a Stalinist state and a social democracy. Grover Norquist said that what really terrified him about the Clinton presidency and got him to crank up his right-wing political activism was the horrible thought that the United States might have a national health care system, as does every other major Western democracy except us. And these folks see politics as war. Horowitz, for instance, writes, "You cannot cripple an opponent by outwitting him in a political debate. You can do it only by following Lenin's injunction." And then he quotes Lenin, "In political conflicts, the goal is not to refute your opponent's argument, but to wipe him from the face of the earth." So, you know, really, again, I grew up a Republican in central Wisconsin in a John Birch Society stronghold. And I think, you know, even in the very conservative Republican party or family I grew up in, the Birch Society was seen as way out there, way right. These folks who dominate the Republican Party and now dominate all branches of our federal government, and by the way, the Republicans also now control most governorships and most state legislatures, and we describe the serious effects of that in our book. These folks are far-right, anti-government extremists dedicated to destroying government, except in the areas of corporate subsidies and also the national security state. So Grover Norquist, who's in my mind, the most important Republican strategist. I think he's even more important than Karl Rove, and we describe why in detail. You know, he says that his vision for government is to cut it in half over the next 25 years so he can get it down to the size where it can be drowned in a bathtub.
We're talking to John Stauber today, co-author of the new book, Banana Republicans. We have a full bank of callers. Let's try to get to all of them if we can. Line 3, San Francisco, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Hey, comment and question. First comment, I don't think that the media has really covered why the Democratic Party has not really been forceful enough in fighting against the far right. And my question really is a continuation. Last week, Thomas Frank was talking why the far right was so popular among people that don't really benefit from it. Is there now a schism or a dissent within the far right developing between those that really control it and the popular force behind it? I'm thinking that by any yardstick, Bush is failing the agenda of the far right, especially in the Middle East. Do you think there will be some changes within it?
Well, John.
It's interesting to look at the right wing because, you know, it's not monolithic. You have different sections, different factions. You have quite a bit of different perspective within the right. But what the right has been able to do is create very effective coalitions for power. They understand power. And so ever since 1992, for instance, Grover Norquist, in his office of Americans for Tax Reform, and by the way, I think most Americans are for tax reform, but Grover's idea, as I mentioned, is to destroy government. He's an anti-government zealot. There's no tax that he likes. Grover Norquist has been holding, since 1992, weekly strategy meetings. And today, those meetings that go on every single Wednesday behind closed doors include all the factious elements of the Republican Party. You know, the White House is represented, the leadership of both houses of Congress, the neocons are there, the think tanks are there, Cato, American Enterprise Institute, Competitive Enterprise Institute, the lobbyists for the Fortune 500 companies are there, and the big PR firms that work for them are there. The right-wing media is in the room. The Christian Coalition folks are in the room. You know, the Catholic anti-abortion folks are in the room. And they decide, what's our agenda this week? What are we going to push in the media? What are we going to hammer away at politically? What's the president going to be doing? How can we support him? They get back together every Wednesday. And that sort of discipline, planning, and coordination is why, you know, Hillary Clinton's eye-rolling comment referring to the vast right-wing conspiracy is actually right on.
You know, John, this morning in the news, I happened to see an article that there is a group of former Reagan, Bush, Clinton administration national security figures and retired military officers who are coming out with a formal statement in the next few days criticizing the Bush administration for its foreign policy, the war in Iraq, and saying the Bush administration should be defeated, apparently, in the coming election. And many of these are Republicans. And this seems like a pretty severe dissenting voice from the Republican Party to their own leader. Are we going to see more of this? What's going to happen to these guys?
Well, I think there is certainly a segment of the Republican Party. I mean, I'm here in Wisconsin. We got lots of Republicans here. Tommy Thompson, Secretary of Health and Human Services, was governor for life here for 14 years before he moved on to the administration. And I do think especially moderate Republicans, and there is such an animal, have been very frustrated for a long time with the far-right domination of their party. And, you know, I see family members of mine who, because of the war and the lies that were told and how badly it went, these Republican family members, frankly, would love to vote against George Bush. But what's interesting about the Republicans is the strategists have always found these so-called wedge issues that manage to pull people together pretty tightly on election day, such as abortion. I have family members who are really angry with the lies and deception behind the selling of the war, but they're also good Catholics, and I suspect that come November, the Republican Party exploitation of the abortion issue is going to keep them in the fold. But certainly, reality has struck, and the lies and deception behind the war and the horrific hatred for the U.S. that's been engendered and the isolation we're seeing in the world, not to mention the waste of lives and resources and hundreds of billions of dollars. This, I think, has emboldened moderate Republicans to jump ship to some degree.
Yeah, John, you talked about a meeting you went to, a talk you gave earlier with 200 people there, and only one or two raised their hands and said they watched Fox News or sort of mainstream news or right-wing news. A book like Banana Republicans and your previous books like Weapons of Mass Deception, are these being read primarily by the choir, so to speak? I mean, are those, if you weren't related to those Republicans in central Wisconsin, would they ever even come into contact with a book like Banana Republicans?
Well, that's a really good question, Bob. And certainly we want our books to be read by Republicans, by right-wingers. And it's really dawned on me, especially with these two books, how difficult it is to get opinions like mine in front of people who spend all their time watching Fox. And believe me, we try. In fact, last summer when Weapons of Mass Deception came out, our big corporate publisher said, look, this book is really going to make the right wing angry. And that's good because, you know, people like Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Joe Scarborough, they're going to have you on their show, and they're going to attack you as traitorous pinko peaceniks who dare to challenge the administration in a time of war on terror. And that's wonderful because, well, no one likes to get beat up and screamed at by the likes of Bill O'Reilly. Getting in front of that audience and arguing mano a mano about what's really going on here with the selling of the war would have been an incredible opportunity. Those right-wingers wouldn't have us on, nor would any of the other corporate media. So my answer to your question is we try, and our publisher tries, to get our book out there so that we can have a real public debate. But I think one of the problems with the media right now is the media in the United States, where most people get their information, the electronic media, has a chopped spectrum. The spectrum runs from centrist to far right. And it's really critical in a democracy that we have a full spectrum of debate. And I think what we've seen with this propagandizing around the war and the fact that most Americans still believe Saddam had something to do with 9/11 is not only is media concentration really bad for democracy in ways that have been enunciated, but we can't have a democracy. We can't understand issues unless we have a media that presents all views, left, right, center, and everything else, and gets it out there. And that's why you go to Canada. They understood that the war wasn't justified, that the arguments were a bunch of hokum. You go to Mexico. They understood that. Britain, France, New Zealand, Australia, the American people were sold a bill of goods by a media whose spectrum runs from center to far right.
We're talking to John Stauber, author or co-author, along with Sheldon Rampin, of the brand new book, Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into a One-Party State, just out with Tarcher Penguin. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We've only got about 8 or 9 minutes left. We have four very patient callers, and I want to get to all four of them before the show ends. So I'm going to ask each of them to make their questions short if I can. Line 4, Chicago, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with John Stauber.
Hi, thank you for pointing all these things out, some of it apparently planned farther back than most of us can remember. I wanted to mention what happened in the early years of the Reagan administration and then pose a couple of questions. I remember that when Raymond Bonner reported for the New York Times the massacre of nearly 1,000 peasants in El Mozote, El Salvador.
I remember that well.
The administration, the Reagan administration, pressured the New York Times to stop the story. Nobody else covered it. They transferred him off, Bonner, off the beat.
Yep.
Then they established a press pool that would be allowed, chosen by the Pentagon, to cover war. they would pick them. The others were kept out. Grenada was the first test case in 83. Some of it is about access, what you were just talking about who's allowed in the room to plan and so forth. And they tested the waters, and it worked, and the press bowed down, and they're being more concentrated than ever. I do want to give credit, whatever we think about Ralph Nader, he's pointed out for a long time that it's one party, the business party, the Democrats and Republicans. Question, with your Center for Media and Democracy, I do have weapons of mass deception here, and others, why does the AP tell Bill Moyers, as they did this weekend, that they need still another media accountability project when there are already some out there trying to get accuracy? And would the press be freer if it were publicly subsidized as it was in early America, from what I understand?
Well, you know, I think one of the most exciting developments in the United States over the last 10 years that I've been working with the Center for Media and Democracy is this huge grassroots media reform movement. It's out there. It's powerful. People on the left, right, and center are tired of being lied to and misled. They see the disastrous consequences in things like this war. Your second question was...
Oops, we've lost her, and I'm spacing out myself. I think that, I'm not really sure. Well, this is a point of high intelligence for the Media Matters show here. So, John, let's go back to the phone lines then, and hopefully we can regroup here. Yeah, line two, Champagne, you're on the air with John Stauber and the Spaced Out host.
Yes, I'd like you to discuss the lack of media coverage on reproductive rights. And frankly, I'm not impressed with the liberals' ability to discuss this either in the media. The fact that in the 1980s this issue was out there, and now it's just total silence, despite the fact that we're in the middle of a crisis where over 80% of counties don't have an abortion provider, better coverage for Viagra than birth control. I think I know why the right-wing media is so bad on this, but why isn't the liberal media picking this up? And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, you know, that's a really good question, and I think, you know, my answer to that would be, if you look at what the right has done, as we do in Banana Republicans, they've formed powerful coalitions that help each other, you know, and on the left, we have more issue advocacy, so feminists, pro-choice people, environmentalists, people working for national health care, people working for tax justice, sort of work in their own spheres. If you sort of collected all those issues and realized that unionists, minority voters, women, environmentalists, gays, lesbians, you know, are the nucleus of a powerful movement, but people have to work together in coalition and support each other's agendas. That would really provide power. But I think, you know, it's that old saw about the individual sticks are easily broken, the bundle is hard to break. One thing the right does, they work together in coalition, and I think all our various progressive liberal advocacy and issue groups need to overcome their isolation and support each other, and that will do a better job of forcing the media to cover these issues fairly, because it won't just be one constituency, it'll be all for one.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Line one, Champagne, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Hi, I'll be brief. Doesn't calling calling the Democrats and Republicans one business party really contributes to George Bush and the Republican Party taking dominance, whether in terms of what Ralph Nader did in 2000 and what Ralph Nader might do now? I mean, essentially, that's giving, for ideological purity, giving the whole game to the Republican right wing.
Well, so, I didn't hear the caller endorse Ralph Nader. In fact, I inferred that she probably was going to vote against George Bush. But no, frankly, I think it's important not to dodge the fact that while the Republicans have always been the favored party of big business, over the last 20 years, through the Democratic Leadership Council, the big business has taken over the leadership and direction of the Democratic Party, and What gives the arguments of Ralph Nader strength isn't that they're fallacious, but rather that they really ring true. I mean, remember, half of the people in our country don't even bother to get their butts off the sofa and vote. And I think if you talk with those people, a lot of them would say, hey, it's the same big business interests. No politician is doing anything for me. You know, I think if you think that George Bush should and the right should be defeated, that's fine. But let's not kid ourselves about what's really going on in this country. And, you know, when John McCain himself gets on his knees and when John Kerry himself gets on his knees and begs an anti-choice, pro-war Republican like John McCain to be his running mate, we're in very big trouble in this country in terms of having competing political parties that represent diverse voices.
We've got time for one more call. Line 3, Chicago, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with John Stauber.
Yeah, hi. I've got two points to make, and I'll let you...
Please make them very quickly, sir. We're almost out of time.
When you try to, when you compare the power situation now and in the 60s and 70s, you could have mentioned back in the time of the New Deal, the Republican Party, that is, the press, 85 to 90% of the newspapers supported the Republican candidate against Roosevelt, and it's been that way ever since.
Great point. Thank you very much.
Now, the second point is that the right wing is aiming to get, if it hasn't already gotten control of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and is putting pressure on to change the direction of public broadcasting systems, programming, less public commentary, and so on. Now, the program, now Bill Moyers' program, is being cut down to a half hour from an hour, and so on.
Well, you know, this, Bob, this is the point that the other caller made that we spaced out on. Yeah, we need public support for public broadcasting, but if you look at what's going on in the U.S. compared to other countries, our public broadcasting system is really primarily funded now by big business interests and right-wing political interests, and it has moved itself way to the right. So, you know, the views that I'm the point of view that I'm making here, I don't think is well represented on PBS or NPR, and Bill Moyers is a rare exception, and we see this vicious campaign by the right to try to knock Bill Moyers out of prominence on PBS.
So John Stauber, author of Banana Republicans. I hear the music tuning up in the background, which means they want to get me out of the studio. I want to thank John Stauber for being our guest today. He's the author of the brand new book with Sheldon Rampton, Banana Republicans, How the Right Wing is Turning America into One-Party State. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The next 4 weeks, we're going to have recorded shows that we've got for you while I'm on the road scouting out new programs. I want to thank Victor Picard, my terrific producer, and I'll be back live with you 5 weeks from today. Thank you all for listening. Goodbye, John.
What makes our region such a great place to be? If you include WILL, thanks. You obviously value the service we provide. I'm Interim Station Manager Jay Pierce asking you now to call 244-9455 to help keep it strong. We must meet our annual listener support goal by the end of this month. So please call 244-9455 and renew your membership. Make a first contribution, or if you can, an additional gift. Thanks so much for supporting WILL Urbana.
A flood watch is in effect for Champaign, Edgar, and Vermilion counties until 6 p.m. today. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high in the mid-80s with southwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms likely, some may be severe. The low in the mid-60s with southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.